जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपी जना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, गोपी जना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदनंदन व्रज जनरंजन यशोदनंदन व्रज जनरंजन यमुना तीरावनचारी यमुना तीरावनचारी यशोदानंदन व्रज जनरंजन यमुना तीरावनचारी यमुना तीरावनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज स्तोत्र शत श्री श्रीमद हिस्ट डिवाइन ग्रेस श्री भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंग। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 4 चैप्टर 28 किंग पुरंजना बिकम्स अ वुमन इन द नेक्स्ट लाइफ टेक्स्ट नंबर 11। भयनाम्नोग्रज भ्राता प्रज्वारा प्रत्युपस्थितः ददाहतां पुरीं कृत्स्नां भ्रातु प्रियचिकीर्षया। भयनाम्नोग्रजो भ्राता प्रज्वारा प्रत्युपस्थितः ददाहतां पुरीं कृत्स्नां भ्रातुः प्रियचिकीर्षया भयनाम्नोऽग्रजो भ्राता प्रज्वारा प्रत्युपस्थितः ददाहतां पुरीं कृत्स्नां भ्रातुः प्रियचिकीर्षया Ladies, please. Bhayanamnaha, of bhaya, fear. Agrajaha, elder. Bhrata, brother. Prajvaraha, named Prajvara. Pratyupasthitaha, being present there. Dadaha, set fire. Tam, to that. Purim, city. Krutsnam, wholesale. Bhratuhu, his brother. Priyachikirushaya, in order to please. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Under the circumstances, the elder brother of Yavana Raja, known as Prajvara, set fire to the city to please his younger brother, whose other name is fear itself. Purport. According to the Vedic system, a dead body is set on fire. But before death, there is another fire or fever, which is called Prajvara or Vishnujvara. Medical science verifies that when one's temperature is raised to 107 degrees, a man immediately dies. This prajvara or high fever at the last stage of life places the living entity in the midst of a blazing fire. Text number 12. Tasyam sandahyamanayam sapaura saparichadaha Kautambika kutumbinya upatapyata sanvayaha. When the city was ablaze, all the citizens and servants of the king, as well as family members, sons, grandsons, wives, and other relatives, were within the fire. King Puranjana thus became very unhappy. Purport. There are many parts of the body, the senses, the limbs, the skin, the muscle, blood, marrow, etc. And all these are considered here figuratively as sons, grandsons, citizens and dependents. When the body is attacked by the Vishnu Jwara, the fiery condition becomes so acute that sometimes one remains in a coma. This means that the body is in such severe pain that one becomes unconscious and cannot feel the miseries taking place within the body. Indeed, the living entity becomes so helpless at the time of death that, although unwilling, he is forced to give up the body and enter another. In Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that man may, by scientific advancement, improve the temporary living conditions, but that he cannot avoid the pangs of birth, old age, disease, and death. These are under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the agency of material nature. A foolish person cannot understand this simple fact. Now people are very busy trying to find petroleum in the midst of the ocean. They are very anxious to make provisions for the future petroleum supply, but they do not make any attempts to ameliorate the conditions of birth, old age, disease, and death. Thus, a person in ignorance, not knowing anything about his own future life, is certainly defeated in all his activities. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Prajvara, or this high fever of 107 degrees that appears within the body at the time of death, is the elder brother of Yavana Raja or Bhaya. Naturally, when there is such fever and the body is at the verge of death, what comes from that is fear. So they attack together. So according to the Vedic system, it says the body is set on fire. So in general, those who are awakened by spiritual knowledge, they understand that the ultimate state of this body is one of three possible states. It either becomes ash, or dirt, or stool. It becomes ash when the body is cremated or burnt after the spiritual spark has left the body. So generally, those who have gone through Vedic purification of life, their body is set on fire. Or another is to bury the body. So after the body is burnt, what remains is a pot of ash. So whether it is a beautiful body or not a beautiful body, whether it is the body of a great person within this world or a beggar on the street, whether it is a rich man's body or a poor man's body, whether it is an American man's body or an Indian man's body or a Chinese or whoever, the ultimate state is a lump of ash. That distinction doesn't remain. Oh, this ash is of such and such person and it looks different from the ash of this person. Still bones and ash. Or the body is buried. And over time, the natural decay within material elements mixes the body into dirt. Or it is eaten by animals. In some traditions, they leave their dead relatives on the roof for vultures to pick on. Or other animals that are killed by, let's say, the lions and tigers or any carnivores, after they ingest the flesh, whatever is of that body is pushed out as stool. So that's the ultimate destination of the body. However, when one hears explanations like these or hears like this from the Vedic system, the natural tendency is to not care for the body. Right? Because if this is what the ultimate destination is, then let me just not care for the body. So the Vedic system also tells us that that's not the right approach either. There is proper care for the body, because the body provides for us, it becomes a vehicle for an ultimate purpose. The ultimate purpose being the awakening of our Krishna consciousness. So the body is very useful. If it is neglected or not cared for or abused, or you know, one becomes indifferent to it, then too the progress of Krishna consciousness becomes difficult. Now in very advanced cases, it doesn't matter whether the body is fed something or not, whether it is cared for or not, it doesn't matter. Our six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they lived under a tree. They hardly had a palmful of buttermilk or a stick of butter once in a couple of days. It didn't matter. The body was emaciated, but it didn't matter. Dhruva Maharaj didn't breathe, or he took a breath once in 15 days or so, or they ate dried leaves from the forest. It didn't matter. So we're not talking of those cases. We're talking of cases where the awakening of Krishna consciousness happens and progresses through Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti stage, let's say. On such a path, taking care of the body is important. An obsession with taking care of the body is a waste of time. It's also a waste of the human spirit. Complete neglect of the body is also an ultimate waste of the human spirit, because one doesn't have the vehicle to take him or her to the ultimate destination. So what's important is to find that right balance, to find that right utility for the body. So the right utility is to keep the body clean and pure in its purpose. So cleanliness is, let's begin from the external perspective, external cleanliness. So the Vedic system provides bathing, marking with tilak, utilizing the limbs of the body in rendering service to the Shri Murthy, the deity of Krishna, using the capacity of the tongue to taste or to vibrate, using the capacity of, on the subtler level, the mind to contemplate, to desire for serving Krishna, to contemplate on the name, form, pastimes and qualities of Krishna. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna provides what are the different ways by which one can perform the right kind of austerities for the body and mind? What is the right kind of austerity of speech? And our acharyas, starting with Rupa Goswami, has given us the Vaidhi Sadhana set of practices that give us the right dosage of austerity. To avoid Zatyahara, Prayasa, Prajalpa, Niyamagraha, and to cultivate Utsahan, Nishchaya, Dhairya, Tat Tat Karma Pravartanat, Sangatyaga, Satovrate, like that. So these provide for that perfect balance to keep the body in its perfect state or in the proper state to help us. Because we're still dealing with an attachment to the body or a misidentification with the body, thinking we are this body. So anything that happens to the body immediately disturbs our sense of being. There is a severe pain in the knee. Then the mind naturally look, oh, knee's pain, nothing else can happen because it takes so much attention. Because still there is bodily identification. While the bodily identification is being, let's say, severed or separated, this is still a reality. It's like having a car and one doesn't take care of this car, then one cannot get to the destination. Then one feels helpless, oh, I can't get anywhere. So the natural progression of material nature is that before the point of death, this body is set ablaze by an internal fever called prajwara. And that is the indication, or that is the beginning of fear for everyone. Because one has to give up one's body. One has to forcibly give up one's body. One doesn't have a choice. It is like if someone's living in an apartment and someone else brings a big sledgehammer and breaks away, breaks the walls, smashes the doors and windows, then there is fear. And one knows that this apartment is no longer inhabitable. They have to leave. They're forced to leave. Similarly, Dehi, the soul, is within this body called Deha. And it is like living in an apartment. And Prajvara, or this fever, sets this apartment or this encasing in fire or on fire, and one is forced to take up another body. So in the case of Puranjana, his city has been set ablaze. And when the city is burning, everything and everyone within the city are also set ablaze. His citizens, his servants, all his family members, his wives, sons, grandsons, daughters, relatives, everyone. That means when death happens and that body is set on fire, there is no part of the body that is left aside. Everything is finished. So here Prabhupada tells us that all the parts of the body, the senses, the limbs, the skin, muscle, blood, marrow, are all considered here figuratively as sons, grandsons, citizens and dependents. When the body is attacked by Vishnu Jwara, the fiery condition becomes so acute that sometimes one remains in a coma. So in the extreme situation, the prajwara, the Vishnu jwara is so intense that to counteract that pain, the person becomes unconscious. Not willingly, but that's how it works. I was thinking about this. You know, sometimes when there is a boxing match or some fight, one fellow punches the other and, like they say, punched his lights out. I become unconscious because the punch is so intense, the pain is so intense that it can put a person out of state of consciousness. So when one goes into coma, Prabhupada writes that it becomes, the fiery condition becomes so acute that one becomes unconscious and cannot feel the miseries taking place within the body. So some might say, that's not so bad. At least he doesn't know. He's not experiencing the pain so much. But we understand that that is unfortunate. Because even at the point of death, even at that condition, somehow or the other, if one can remember, chant, or hear the name of Krishna, then one has a tremendous opportunity. But coma means one doesn't, that facility isn't so easily available. Indeed, the living entity becomes so helpless at the time of death that although unwilling, he is forced to give up the body and enter another. So there are, like we've heard recently, there are many ways of learning. One way of learning is, the best way of learning is by hearing. And the worst way of learning is by experiencing. Bhagavatam is giving us, and Prabhupada mercifully is giving us, all of this ahead of time, so that we don't have to learn it by experience. Because by the time we have to learn it by experience, we might not learn it at all. And it is important to learn it ahead by hearing it or hearing about it so that one can prepare for it. And this is something that is inevitable for everyone. And how one leaves one's body determines the strength of their, or is an indicator of their spiritual advancement. So preparation is important. In life, there's a lesson that we've learned, in life, nothing is done without preparation, or nothing should be done without preparation. Any stage of life must be prepared for. One should prepare to be a student, and one should prepare during the student life how to manage the next phase of life, whether that is, you know, continuation of brahmacharya or the entering of grihastha life. One should prepare. One should prepare by understanding what are my responsibilities, what are my duties, what are the experiences of others. Let me hear from them. What are their, how have they become successful? What are their failures? How have they struggled? When one enters grihastha life, then there is the next phase of life, vanaprastha or sannyas, or as life moves through old age and disease and death, preparing. So Prabhupada would say that life is an examination, that death is an examination and life is a preparation. We're all preparing. So we're not obsessed by death, but we're all preparing to die. But we are not unaware either. Death can come at any moment. If it happens the natural way, natural progressive way, that there is old age and death, that's nice. That there is time for preparation. For some reason, if it doesn't happen like that, then so better to prepare now. And preparation now begins with hearing. The story of Puranjana is being narrated for a particular reason. So we hear and prepare now. And not lose track of it. Although it might not be something that we might be conscious at every moment, oh, I'm going to die, I'm going to die, I'm going to die. But the one lives one's life in such a way that there is nothing to regret at the time of death. Or best, that there is full facility to chant, hear and chant about Krishna. However, in the search for or in the urge to extend one's experience within this world, because we are eternal living entities by nature, and we are put into a temporary body, so we have to work against that incompatibility. So this preservation of life in all circumstances. So people try to understand that, oh, while I'm in this temporary condition, let me, even if they don't think like that, let me expand the experience of my senses. Let me do something such that I have unlimited sense gratification, not just for myself, but I'm very liberal for others as well. So they come up with grand plans of extended sense gratification into the future. So the example Prabhupada gives us, the search for petroleum. Because with petroleum comes many facilities for us in this world today. All our cars are fueled by petroleum. All our computers are made from petroleum byproducts. Clothes are made from petroleum byproducts. Plastics, and pretty much there is plastic in every aspect of people's lives, including their smiles. It's just plastic everywhere. So much plastic. Plastic wrap, plastic bag, plastic book, plastic cases. I don't want to get into how much plastic there is. It's all coming from oil. And so the future vision of, oh, if there's no petroleum, what to do? So they have to now think about electric cars. Okay, even if cars are fueled by electricity, everything inside the car is made with plastic. So the whole dependence of the human being on this planet right now is on petroleum or alternative fuels. However, Prabhupada says, a foolish person cannot understand this simple fact. What is that? That while all of this is happening, material energy or material nature is working unaffected, uninterrupted in bringing about old age, disease, and death. And nobody is making any solution to these actual problems. Some countries have money and good resources, we'll say good for now, good resources of petroleum and other, let's say, natural resources. They have that abundance. So they're very, they don't care. They don't care about birth, death, old age, and disease because they're in abundance. There are other countries who are starving for these resources. And they also don't care for birth, death, old age, and disease because their attention is on, they don't have these resources. So whether someone has or does not have, either of these are not worried about birth, death, old age, and disease. Because the haves are always enjoying, the have-nots are always complaining or suffering because they don't have enough. People are very busy trying to find petroleum in the midst of the ocean. They're very anxious to make provisions for future petroleum supply, but they do not make any attempts to ameliorate the conditions of birth, old age, disease, and death. So the best solution, if someone is said, or someone is told, birth, old age, disease, and death are real problems of life, then they say, we have a solution. Just don't have any birth. Enjoy sex, contraception, no birth, no problem. But that doesn't happen like that. In fact, so many more are born unwanted. So many more are born uncared for. There's still a problem for the individual and for the collective society. Old age. Old age is a problem. Let's just build nice nursing homes and places where from outside everything looks beautiful, nice manicured gardens and lawns, but inside are the elderly really suffering. There's no company. There's no one to even care how they're doing. But from the outside, looks nice. It says something, something pavilion, nice nursing house. Disease is a problem? No problem. The whole field of medicine and pharmaceutical research will take care of all these things. All you have to do is take a pill and you're done. You just have to take a pill every day for the rest of your life. But that's okay, come on. No pain, no gain, something. But we made it so easy. Instead of, and of course, unless you're in a really bad condition that you have to get hospitalized, but for everything else, take a pill. And we've made medicine so easy that you take a pill for every little thing that you may have. You have a headache? Take this pill. You have some cold? Take that pill. You have pain here? Take this pill. You have this. Everything is pill. Doesn't matter. We have solutions to counteract these things just so that you don't get distracted from enjoying life. But as far as death is concerned, we don't have a solution. In a few years, very soon, we should be able to. And for that, we have funded so much research in how to counteract death. All right, you may not be able to counteract death, but we have ways in which you can keep it at bay, you know, at least for some time. So we have nice cosmetics, we have nice solutions, we have nice lifestyle things, you know, this diet, that thing, whatever. So you don't have to worry about death. Who worries about death? Don't be so morbid. There's only one life. Live life. There used to be a tagline or an ad line for a cigarette manufacturing company. Live life, king size. So don't worry about these things. Just make the most. So Prabhupada says, a foolish person. Foolish means the reality is right here, but cannot see it. Or even worse, is does not see it. A foolish person lives in denial. Complete denial. Oh, no, no. It's like this. Yeah, but you know, see everything. Everything else is not so bad. Foolishness is denial, living in denial. Or ignorance. Both are dangerous. Thus a person in ignorance, not knowing anything about his own future life, is certainly defeated in all his activities. Prabhupada and the Shastras are giving us things from a different vantage point altogether. A person may be very successful in his or her life, may have accomplished certain things, whether it be money or name or fame or position or a big family, whatever it is that they think that they have accomplished at the time of death or when death happens, all of that is gone. It doesn't make any, it's not relevant anymore for that living entity. When that living entity dies, he does not take anything with him except a big stockpile of karmic reactions. That's why it's called a burden of karma. And that big stockpile of reactions will determine a lowly body or somebody in the next life. And he has to repeat everything. Even if the person was the most intellectually advanced person on this planet, when he or she dies, and if for some reason take a human birth, they again have to learn it from A, B, C, get beaten up, you know, depending on where you go to school, you get beat up for saying the wrong thing. I went to school in India, and when you made mistakes, you got beat up by the teacher really bad. They would have a cane in the hand and on the palm, or with a ruler on the knuckles, or I had a PT teacher who, he would start the PT period like this, make us all stand in line, and while he will say, attention, get his belt out. And you'd say, okay, now bend and touch your toes. And if you didn't bend properly, or if we bent our knees to touch our toes, we'd go, pow! So it doesn't matter. I might have been Einstein in my previous life. But in this life, you know, I might be a student somewhere and get beat up because I couldn't say A, B, or C, or I couldn't bend to touch my toes. So my point is, doesn't matter who one is or how much they have accumulated, the next life you start from zero, or perhaps less than zero, depending on what body one gets. But progressive human life means that the next stage is much better than the previous stage. That's what that is the meaning of the word of progression. Forward moving or upward moving. So we're hearing from Narada Muni, we're hearing from our parampara, before we have to experience these things. It's an experience before the actual experience. So I'll end with a story. There was a man who had four wives. And his youngest wife, he was extremely enamored by her, very attached to her. From morning till night, he was just thinking about her. He would bring her gifts and many, many things, cosmetics, jewelry, etc. And when he, so that's how he was, absorbed in his fourth wife. When he had to go to any party or gatherings, he would take his third wife, because his third wife was very attractive. And everybody used to envy him. Wow, what a trophy wife he has. Whenever he needed any advice or counsel, he would go to his second wife because she was very wise. And he felt very supported by his second wife. But his first wife, he neglected completely. He didn't even know that he had four wives. He thought he only had three. Like that, complete neglect. So as life would bring to us, he was at the last stage of his life, literally on his deathbed and breathing his final breath. And all his wives were gathered around him, but his attention was completely on his fourth wife. And so he asked her, "My dear, when I die, will you come with me?" And she said, "No way." The coldness with which she said, "No way," struck his heart so badly. All my life I've just done this, you know, done everything for you. I spent all my money for you. I bought you so many gifts. All my thought was absorbed in just caring for you. And how cold can you be?" She said, "That's a fact, but I will not go with you." So with sadness in his eyes, he turned to his third wife and he asked her, "My dear, at least will you come?" She said, "Oh, I'm so sorry, I can't." "Oh," he asked his second wife, "at least will you come?" She said, "I can come up to the cemetery. That's about it. And then you move on." "Oh, terrible." First wife said, "I will be there." He said, "Oh, I have neglected you completely. And now you're actually my friend. You're actually one who cares about me." But unfortunately, it was too late and he died. So it is said that we all have four wives or four husbands, as the case might be. And the fourth one, the one that is most, people that are absorbed completely with, is our body. We spend all our thought, we spend all our money and all the different things of life in caring for the body. Cosmetics, jewelry, watches, clothes, whatever. So at the time of death, the body doesn't go with us. It's burnt, buried, or eaten away. The third wife, that's the trophy, are all the accomplishments of our life. Certificates, medals, degrees, the patents, pats on the back, whatever the accomplishments that we take to gatherings to show off to others. And everyone says, ah, look at him. A nice degree from such and such university. It's all nicely framed and hung on the walls, wherever. These are the trophies that we show off. But at death, those also don't go along with us. The second wife are all the friends and relatives to whom we go for counsel and support and advice. So at the time when death happens, they come all the way to the cemetery and that's about it. And they can't do anything beyond that. So I said, like the first wife, parallel, is our soul. Always there. It's who we are, but always there. But totally uncared for. Or even ignored. Don't even notice that there is, that is who we are. And the soul is not cared for, nor nourished, nor done anything about. So any questions, comments, thoughts? Jitendra Prabhu, Mother Dhanakeli. Yes.
In the school, it's legal?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I mean, they used to do that here when I was in high school, but they don't do it anymore.
Yeah, they don't do so. They don't do here.
There's too many lawsuits.
Correct.
But they can get away with it over there.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just thinking about in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in that verse that says, Janma Mrityu Jaravyadi Dukkha Doshanu Darshanam, that Srila Prabhupada says in the purport that unless one actually is convinced of the sufferings of birth, death, old age, and disease, then there's no impetus to make advancement in spiritual life. So I was thinking how the Srimad Bhagavatam is very expert, because understanding that we're in that Tathashta region, we can be attracted to one side or the other. So the Bhagavatam seems to have a very nice balance of showing repeatedly, beating into us, yeah, the lesson of the negativity and the sufferings of the material side, and then giving us the very strong attraction to Krishna's form and name and qualities and pastimes. So many, there are other groups out there that the end is near, apocalypse is coming, you know, there's many doomsdayers out there, and even persons who talk about the collapse of the economy and this and that, but they don't have a positive attraction to offer people. So there's no impetus for real spiritual life, you know. So anyways, I was just appreciating how the Bhagavatam has a very nice balance like that.
Yeah, and mostly such doomsayers, all they do is inject fear in the hearts of people. They don't know what to do with it. I was thinking about compassion when you were speaking. It's just that there is so much compassion. When it's an indication of compassion when someone is forewarned that there's danger there. Oh, thank you. And the extra element of compassion is not just that there is a warning that there is something dangerous there, but here's the actual path. Oh, thank you for not only avoiding the danger, but, you know, keeping me safe or helping me go to a safe place. Therefore, personalities who are emblems of compassion are the parents, the teachers, the guru, the king. And so they have a mandate that you should not be one of these if you cannot help your dependents from the quagmire of birth and death. So Bhagavatam is playing that wonderful role, being so compassionate. Thank you. Yes? OK. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.